Welcome to the Cello Sherpa podcast, where we explore all aspects of the climb to the summit from intermediate musician to the professional stage. Check us out online at thecelloSherpa.com or follow us on Instagram, TikTok, or YouTube at the Cello Sherpa. I'm Joel Dallow, your host. I joined the cello section of the Atlanta Symphony Orchestra in 1999 and founded the Riverside Chamber Players based in Roswell, Georgia in 2003. If you're looking for a bit of extra help on learning your orchestra or solo repertoire, perhaps we can help. Visit www.thecellosherpa.com and drop us a line. We offer virtual or in-person lessons. Today's episode is sponsored by Clear Resources, your premier resource for compliance, legal, ethics, and risk. For more information, visit them online at clearresources.com. In our last episode, we released part one of this fantastic conversation with cellist and social media star Ken Kubota. So if you haven't had a chance to listen to that yet, I recommend starting with that episode before you listen to this one, because we're going to jump right back in to where we left off. I want to ask you, though, about the partnerships that you have and how that works. So I know you have ongoing partnerships with Perastro Strings and Ray-Ban and Meta. What does that mean exactly when you have a partnership? What does that look like? And how did you end up working with these companies? Talk about the logistics of that.
Yeah, for sure. I think to first up clarify, the partnership that I have is primarily, like, the ongoing thing is with Perastro, and I guess also like Bella Rosins. But Ray-Ban and Meta were kind of more of like a one-off project that I did with them. So I wouldn't really say that that's an ongoing collaboration per se.
Okay.
I think with the Ray-Ban and Meta, that happened because a third party advertising firm reached out to me when one of my videos went viral. And generally, like, these things happen in the social media space when, like, a creator's content does really well. It gets noticed by these agencies that work kind of like as a middleman to connect big companies to influencers.
Okay.
And when the big companies are looking to have their products promoted and have creative marketing tactics to have their product in the market space, they often hire these agencies where they deal with finding influencers and onboarding them and working together to create a product together.
Okay.
So at least in terms of the Ray-Ban and the Meta, it was something that was reached out through just like email.
Yeah.
And then worked through that to make a series of marketing videos.
Okay.
Essentially ads for their product.
Yeah.
Which was at the time smart glasses. And with Perastro, that was just a cold turkey email from my side of, as you develop a following on social media, one of the things that you can really kind of start doing is reaching out to different brands and companies to ideally collaborate with them to develop a mutually beneficial relationship, as any kind of business adventure will, I guess, include, which, for me, the things that I was looking for, obviously, were strings. Because, you know, as string players and as a cellist, it's expensive, man.
Yeah.
To just, like, buy strings, a full set for a cellist, you know, is clocking, like, around 300 plus.
Yes.
And it really adds up in a lifetime. And if you're depending on how frequently you want to switch them out, it was something that, at the time, I was trying to definitely find some kind of string sponsor, because I'm like, yeah, this is expensive. And I think at the time I was like more or less still not too far out of school. So, you know, you're not really making bank yet.
Yeah.
After you graduate. So you're like, I got to find ways to cover costs somehow. So I literally just reached out. I'm like, hey, I'm a big fan, because I was already using Perastro strings and I really loved them. So I'm like, hey, I'm like a big fan of the strings, looking to see if we can find a way to collaborate together where I, you know, obviously promote your product in exchange for like a sponsorship of the strings where I could get like a few sets per year or whatever you want to coordinate with them.
Yeah.
And fortunately, they replied, because there are a lot of cases where I've sent a lot of emails to a lot of different brands and companies, and sometimes you don't even get a response.
Right.
You know, or you just get, you know, sorry, we're not looking for that right now kind of thing often. So fortunately, Parashra was very open, and our first collaboration that we did together also went well. So it, I think, set grounds for a continued partnership afterwards.
Yeah. Yeah.
So fortunately, it's still going, and hopefully it can continue to exist.
Yeah.
Because as a string player, it's a great partnership to have, for sure.
Yeah, for sure. Well, let me ask you then, you don't necessarily have to answer this if you don't want to, but so you play in Empire Wild, mm-hmm. you obviously have JHM jams, mm-hmm. and you're generating content for social media on a weekly basis. If you didn't have the group on the side, the Empire Wild that you were doing, and you were just doing social media influencing, is it actually possible to make a living just off of generating the social media content that you are?
I think it's a little tricky. There are ways to do it. I think right now, with the bandwidth that I have, I don't know if I could bust it out. But so it kind of like, here's like the breakdown of generally kind of what you need to do if you want to make a living on social media, right? So the primary sources of income for social media is not really through ads. Sure, like through YouTube and I think TikTok and Instagram a little bit. They used to do more of these bonuses, but you get like these trickles of like cents mm-hmm. per view on all your content. So unless you are clocking, especially on YouTube, like millions of views consistently, it's not as realistic. You know, I think if you are clocking like hundreds of thousands of views or even like close to a million, then, you know, like those kind of things add up, and sure, you can like make thousands of dollars just from the ad revenue per month.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
However, for anybody to get to that point is not easy. You know, it's a very saturated market right now.
Yeah.
But like as a full-time content creator, it becomes a balance of the ad revenue. So if you're a big time creator, it is a chunk. It's a substantial chunk that you can make. And then the things that bring in, I think, more money are the brand collaborations. So when you are working with different brands and different companies, the rates that you can charge them are often, you know, depending on the company, of course. But if it's usually like a bigger company, they have a bigger marketing budget and can accommodate usually your rates. So then you have that. And also, as the creator, you try to funnel them into different platforms or different sources where it can generate income for you. So even if you're not making money directly through Instagram, you could push your audiences from Instagram to, say, like you make a digital course based on something that they are interested in, or create other digital products. Sample packs is something that I create, or anything of that nature where you're pushing people to buy certain things that they are interested in or that they are going to get value from mm-hmm. is another opportunity for that. And then I think for me, aside from those things, because of what I have created and the portfolio that I have, I also work as like a string contractor for like different clients and different events. So whenever anybody's like, I'm looking for musicians for this event, or, you know, like a wedding or whatever, I have a roster now of over 300 whatever musicians that have decided to do this series with me on JHM Jams. And then even like, I guess I have the videos where people can check. And that opens up opportunities for more work in that space, or because I do audio video production from doing all these covers and just the content, I also get hired to do pop covers, to create content for other people, whether if it's like they need a videographer or they need like recording. I like literally go and record people's pre-screening auditions for colleges.
Oh, wow.
As well.
Okay.
You know, or like anything that has to do with audio and video production, whether if it's audition recordings or something much more professional, commercial kind of things, I now have the skill sets and a portfolio to be able to show them.
Yeah.
So you have a lot of work that comes through that, even like photography. I have clients now where you take photos of them.
Yeah.
That's how it has kind of manifested for me. When you create something like that, it opens up, I think, a lot of opportunities for you to branch out, that you have something to show for, I think, through the portfolio that you have created over the years.
So the social media presence, in essence, becomes a marketing tool for other ventures that you've gotten into. So it's been sort of...
For sure.
I mean, it does open a lot of doors that way, because it puts you all over the internet. And when people are looking for stuff, like even for weddings and receptions and corporate functions, I'm sure the first person they might call is you. Hey, we need this kind of group for this sort of function. But I mean, that makes perfect sense. I didn't actually think about that angle. I was thinking about just what can you generate from just the social media presence. But that really does make sense. And you see when you get on Instagram and TikTok that lots of people are pitching things. They've got your attention, and they're pitching either certain products to buy, or like you were talking about, a digital product that they've created or a course that they've put together that you can buy. So yeah, that's a great marketing tool. That's for sure.
Yeah. I think it's like something that I often talk about, where, you know, the way that I view social media is there's this concept in marketing called mental real estate. A good example is when you think of top three fast food hamburger joints that you love.
Mm-hmm.
And like the first three that come to your mind are the companies that have acquired your mental real estate in that given field or that category.
Yeah.
And what I'm trying to do is to acquire a similar kind of thing, where my name pops up in the top three of anybody's mind when they think of cello or pop musician or versatile cellos or pop covers or anything of that nature, or even just audio, video production or photography, whatever it is. I'm trying to position myself where when people think of those things, I can be hopefully like the top three. So when you get to position yourself into somebody's mental real estate, then it's an incredible power of whenever they are looking to have whatever it is, that the chances of them reaching out to you exponentially increases.
Mm-hmm.
And this works really well as a freelance musician when, you know, a lot of the times the freelance gigs that come your way are maybe not up to you. It's like somebody referring you or somebody just calling you. And when you're in that position, you really want to have people, one, just like remember that you exist,
yeah,
that you're like, hey, I'm here. You know, I still do this. You know, I still play. And sometimes even people that you've worked with in school, if you haven't seen them in a very long time, or you haven't even come across their content in a while, you forget that they exist when you're looking for a violinist. And like the first three that come to your mind might be just like the violinist that you just like most recently saw in person.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe like a violinist that you like recently saw just like scrolling on social media, and maybe like a violinist that is literally a very close friend of yours.
Right.
You know, to be able to fit into that list is a hard thing sometimes. So I try to keep that in mind, because I think the whole reaching out and connecting with all of my friends every day is difficult.
Yeah.
You know, it's a little unrealistic for me to be in touch with everybody all the time. So I think by having myself out there on social media on a frequent and consistent basis, it opens up an opportunity for my friends to, one, remember that I exist. And then when they at least think of me, or when a gig comes around and they're like, oh, I need a cellist for this gig, maybe if they had recently seen one of my videos, just scroll through their feed, they're like, oh yeah, Ken's in New York, like he's around.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll reach out to him. So I think it adds, I think, an additional layer of an advantage when you choose to kind of lay yourself out there on social media on a regular basis and create a presence.
Yeah.
Is one of these benefits called mental real estate.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. That's a really good explanation. So what advice would you give to a young musician that might like to become a social media star?
I think to first go into it without the mentality of trying to become a star is probably helpful. Yeah. The reality is now it's even more saturated. There's more creators and more wonderful kinds of content that's getting pumped out into the space daily. And to compete with that is tricky. You like really have to work hard. So I think one of the things that I try to tell those people that wants to get started is to first figure out what value you can provide your audience. You have to remember that whether if it's on social media or not, it is that creates a successful relationship is this kind of mutually beneficial thing where you are providing value to your audience or your friends or whoever it is around you. And in return, you can also get something back that balances this thing out. So on social media, you have to figure out what is the value that I can provide. And on social media space specifically, might exist in forms of education, inspiration, or entertainment. Mm-hmm. You know, those are generally popular categories in which people try to provide value.
Yeah.
And in addition to that, much like any business, you're trying to solve a problem. We have these things called niche statements for companies or businesses where you first identify what your niche is, and then you identify a problem that you see in the world, mm-hmm. and then you offer a solution to that through your niche. And once you can come up with a niche statement for your own self, that can become your brand, and it gives you clarity in terms of like the kind of content that you can create and the kind of identity that you can become when you start putting yourself out there. And all the value that you provide revolves around that niche statement that you have created for yourself. And when you have that, it helps give a little bit more clarity in the content production. And then aside from that, a really important thing, aside from obviously providing value with every content that you're putting out, but the consistency is a difficult one for most people. It's endless. You have to play the long game and you have to consistently and constantly put out content, because what consistency does for your audience is that it builds trust and it builds respect and it builds credibility. And to gain that takes time and a lot of, I guess, content in which you have enough of a portfolio to be able to claim your credibility in that certain thing, because I think you'll often see sometimes like certain creators might go viral of just like one video that they create that goes viral. But when you check out their profile, they don't have like anything else, or it's like really sporadic. And that's harder to follow or to commit to a follow, because for the audience, it's not something that is a regular thing that they can expect from this creator if they were to follow.
Right.
So I think having that consistency is, again, important. And on top of that, I think you have to be very compassionate and empathetic on the space, because not everybody is nice. And I think sometimes people get really affected by the mean people in the space. And being a content creator means that you are constantly putting yourself out there for people to make assumptions or for them to judge or for them to really project their own insecurities and their own happiness towards you, because, you know, you just happened to be there and you were a good target. That's hard for a lot of people to deal with, some of the psychological and the mental health that can come with being a creator. So I try to always remind myself that if anybody is mean or perhaps saying things that are maybe not so ideal towards me, then, you know, I first try to come from a place of compassion and empathy to understand that, you know, for anybody to consume your content, process it, and then to spit out like something mean to you, it's like one, a lot of effort, but they must be going through so much pain in their own life that it has to come out this way. So I think having a sense of compassion will help you navigate inevitably diverse audience in social media space is something that I've tried to always keep in mind. And obviously there are great moments and great people that you get to connect with.
Yeah.
But it's not always that. Yeah.
I think that's really great advice. And I think it's something we also suffer a little bit from being a classical musician, because you face so much rejection, especially from my experience, just taking dozens of orchestra auditions. Most of them end with rejection until they don't. So, and you only need one not to in order to be successful. So we almost have to have a bit of thick skin and really work on our own mental health to be able to manage that sort of constant criticism and constant feeling of pressure that we put on ourselves on how people are going to perceive us. But putting yourself on social media, you're really putting yourself out there for people to be negative or positive. And it's much easier from a keyboard to be negative and critical than it is to your face. So it's really sort of upped the game when it comes to digital, and online presence is very different than human personal interaction.
Yeah, for sure.
So this has been really great. So much fascinating information and a lot of things we haven't talked about on this show. So I really appreciate you coming on and sharing your advice in this area. Is there anything else that we've missed that you'd like to share with our audience?
I hope some people get a chance if they're interested to enter the social media space, because I think obviously the amount of effort it takes is a lot, but I think the rewards that come with your efforts can be amazing.
Mm-hmm.
I'm always surprised and very grateful that I decided to get into it, because I've connected with so many people that I would have never dreamed of connecting with, or work with people that I normally wouldn't come across in my day-to-day life if I hadn't been doing what I do. So it's an incredible opportunity and holds a lot of potential for everybody if they so choose and have the courage to commit and to jump into the deep end.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for joining us today on the Cello Sherpa podcast.
My pleasure. This was fun. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much to Ken Kubota for joining us today and sharing his story with us. And thank you for listening to another episode of the Cello Sherpa podcast. For more information on Ken and any of the links we spoke about today, check out our show notes by scrolling down on the episode. Be sure and catch our next episode, where cellist Zlatimir Fung returns. We talk about how in September he will become the youngest faculty member to ever join Juilliard. He just continues to break records. We're here to serve you, so if you have questions or topic suggestions you would like us to cover in future episodes, please use the contact page on our website, thecellosherpa.com. You will also find information about the specific services we offer on the website. Don't forget to follow us and rate us on whatever platform you get your podcasts. This helps us climb the rankings so other people can find us. Today's episode was edited by Eric Begay at Red House Productions and produced and recorded by me, Joel Dallow.